Earth Day is this coming Monday. I've got Kim Ross. She's the executive director of Rethink Energy Florida. We'll talk about sustainability. Barbara Goldstein and Dr. David Gusak talking about this remarkable mural. You're going to want to stay tuned for that. And, of course, Nancy Dignan with us bringing another My Weather View. So stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office. Merrymaids, call Merrymaids. Relax, and it's done. And by Chelsea Salon and Spa, Tallahassee's largest Aveda lifestyle spa and salon since 1979.
In 1945, Jack Whidden started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Whidden Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Whidden because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Whidden Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Whidden wanted, and it's been the Whidden way of doing business for over 70 years. Whidden Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Whidden Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or whiddenglass.com.
Yes, in fact, my friend, Monday marks another Earth Day celebrated worldwide. I think something like 138 countries around the globe that join in on this, recognizing the necessity for all of us to individually and collectively think about our impact on this planet that we call home. And here's a quote from Rachel Carson. This is 1962, one of the architects of the whole Earth Day movement and a conservationist. Her quote is, "In nature, nothing exists alone." Indeed. So the connectivity that we share as a species on the planet, along with all other living things, and we might add, inanimate things, right? Minerals, right? Chemicals, rock formations, I don't know. Everything that you can call home, well, we are all tied to it. And nature's gifts to our planet are the millions of species that we know and love, of course. So we have to take issue with any of those activities that call into question whether or not it jeopardizes our fate. We have to think in terms of not just conservation issues, but development issues, developmental ideas, I guess you'd say, or those projects that are being proposed or enacted that may in some way violate this delicate balance. You know, accidents happen for sure, and those accidents sometimes come by way of nature itself. Okay, so yeah, Hurricane Michael comes to mind immediately. And those kinds of events, cataclysmic as they are, or earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, tsunamis, all of those kinds of things are already incorporated within the general ecosphere, but it's those things that we can control, that we can take issue with. We got to start thinking through it. So Kim Ross is here to help us advance some of that thinking. Her organization, she started some years ago, and she entitled it Rethink Energy Florida. It's basically a advocacy and educational type organization. And so we're pleased to have her with us because she's going to bring us up to date on some of their activities. And we'll find out what she knows, too, about the current state of the discussion regarding climate change. And no doubt, it is of great concern to everybody. Well, when it comes to the kinds of things that we talk about in relation to climate change, then you have to include habitat loss, trafficking and poaching, unsustainable agriculture, the use of water resources comes to mind there, where you're trying to grow stuff that, man, just isn't intended to be grown in that area. Then you have the whole business of pesticides and pollution. And in our community, you've had people for years talking about the use of lawn fertilizers and septic tanks that impact the aquifer. Yeah, it's a real thing. Jim Smith is one of those people. We've had him on the show in some days past. Big concern about the impact there with our beloved Wakulla Springs. Right. Okay. You don't want me to yak at you this part of the show with all of this information at once. But just to tell you, you know, I'm a conservative in a lot of different ways. And proud to say, when it comes to fiscal policy, when it comes to social issues, yeah. But I think conservation as such isn't a political football, right? And it's odd to me. My parents, and I'm going to share this with Kim, get her reaction. But I think my parents are examples of people who embodied a sort of conservationist point of view, because they were always recycling. They were always looking at how they could best conserve the things that they had within their grasp. And you know, I remember my mother reading Adele Davis. I don't know if any of you have ever read Adele Davis, one of those early on advocates for healthy food, right? Wrote a volume of books, number of books. Well, you know, my mom was totally into that. And so we didn't have sugary foods and soda and all that sort of stuff going on in our household. And, you know, 99% of the food that we ate was prepared right there in the kitchen. So you knew what was in it. And no, you didn't have a lot of salt and MSG and other additives. It just didn't happen. But that kind of thinking, it seems to me, we need to revive with the population at large. And I think Kim's going to help us do that in our conversation with her. Other announcements, too. Hey, you know what? Mosquitoes have a role to play in this grand scheme of things, no doubt. Although many of us wonder what that role is. Was God having a bad day when mosquitoes were created? I don't know, but in fact, in our community, because, you know, we don't have the harsh cold winters like we used to, and because we tend to be a moist environment, yeah, mosquito breeding grounds are a thing. And Leon County is here to remind us, Amnesty Day for tires. Apparently, car tires that are just kind of cast about are the worst offenders. So to help prevent breeding grounds for mosquitoes, Leon County government is in partnership with Florida Department of Environmental Protection, and they're hosting this Amnesty Day for citizens to drop off tires for free. So the event will be on Saturday the 27th, so that's next weekend, and also on Saturday, May the 18th. So you got two Saturdays in a row there. Well, I guess not in a row, but anyway, the 27th of April and the 18th of May, 8 to 5 at the Leon County Fleet Management facility over there. That's at Blair Stone in Miccosukee. You know where that is. Anyway, if you got some old tires laying around your yard, here's your chance. You don't have to pay the recycling fee on it. County will take them off your hands, no cost to you. Do that. Because you know what happens? Those tires, they fill up with water on the inside, and mosquitoes are like, oh, thank you. So you've just created a sanctuary for all the mosquitoes, and we need to not have that happen. And you can dispose of up to 25, by the way, car tires free of charge. I'm not going to accept any commercial loads, so you guys who have like 200 tires sitting there on your back lot, now this is not for you. This is for the simple folks like us that have that same problem. You know, you got rid of that car tire and now it's sitting in your backyard. So, all right, Amnesty Day for tires. Thank you, Leon County, for that. We're going to take a quick break here and talk with Kim Ross coming up in the latter portion of this hour. We have the able, the genuinely productive and informed Nancy Dignon standing by with another My Weather View. So she'll be with us here right after the break. You stay with me.
A first-class, fun-filled outdoor cultural experience is waiting for you at this year's Chain of Parks Art Festival, Saturday and Sunday, April 27 and 28. Amazing, original, and one-of-a-kind works of fine art from over 170 artists from across the country on display. Nationally ranked among the top five art festivals in America by Sunshine Artist Magazine, this two-day celebration is free and open to the public and includes fun kids' activities, fantastic live entertainment, lots of great food, and plenty of libations from the WXYZ bar by Aloft. The Chain of Parks Art Festival, charming, delightfully Southern, and the crown jewel of Tallahassee's festival season. We'll be looking for you Saturday and Sunday, April 27 and 28, at LeMoyne Arts Chain of Parks Art Festival in downtown Tallahassee. Find out more at chainofparks.com.
Hi, I'm Melissa Bruner, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back to the show that is promised to talk with you about all the things that Tallahassee is talking about this week, as well as we can make that happen. And we're blessed to have such able folks join us each week. Kim Ross is standing by. She'll be with us here just momentarily, talking about Earth Day and about her work as director of Rethink Energy Florida, helping us stay in touch with energy management, sustainability issues, what is the best way for us to use the resources we have. Man, and it just goes up and down the line. Well, our city folks are good about helping us out with this aspect in a kind of recycling incentive. So they have this thing going on today. In fact, it's in progress as I speak here with you. Goes on till 2 o'clock today. It's called Cash for Trash. And it is at the Community Beautification and Waste Management Facility. And that's at 2727 Municipal Way. Cash for Trash. This event takes place on the third Saturday of April and October each year. So here we are on that third Saturday, going on now until 2 p.m. to enhance the cleanliness of the local environment. It allows you and I to bring our household waste items and trash that are just too large to fit into the 96-gallon garbage container that we normally would be using for this. And you can bring things like batteries and cleaners and paints and pesticides. So there you go. So in addition, as a thank you, catch this, participating city residential utility customers. So you got to be a city utility customer, apparently. But if you have an active garbage service account, okay, so you're on the list, you're going to get a $5 credit toward your utility bill. Well, all right. So I bring you my two cans of dried up paint that have been sitting in my garage, and some light bulbs that I want to recycle and a few batteries, and I get $5 out of the deal if I'm a city utility customer and I have an active garbage service account. Okay, so there are some conditions, but $5 is $5. Anyway, this is what the city's doing. To receive the utility bill credit, you just present your city utility bill before unloading materials. You can make multiple trips, but you get one credit per utility bill, even if it takes you 3 or 4 times to bring all that junk from your house. Boy, that's a sad thought, too. I hope that's not me, but I got to look around and see what I got stuck away there. Carl's laughing because he knows. Yeah. Although, Carl, you would be proud of me. My carport is starting to actually look like a carport again. It's really cool. All right, enough of this. That's news to the hour regarding trash for cash or cash for trash. And it's better that we turn the mic over to our good friend, meteorologist Nancy Dignon.
Hi, I'm Nancy Dignon, and this is my weather view for this week. Well, we've had several weeks in a row where we've had some severe weather kind of roll through. We've had tornado watches, and some of those watches have turned into warnings. So I thought it'd be a good time to just kind of review what each of that means. So a watch means watch out. It means conditions are favorable, and it comes from SPC, which is the Storm Prediction Center. They're located in Norman, Oklahoma, and they're the experts in the country. So they're watching all of the conditions come together, and they alert folks. Some of the new terminology we're beginning to hear are things like we have a slight risk, or we have a marginal risk, or we have an enhanced risk. There's actually 5 categories. And so we have had actually a slight to marginal risk. And I think the weekend coming up, we may even have an enhanced risk. And what it says is, okay, we know that there are going to be some thunderstorms. We've got, you know, a strong cold front and warm, muggy air colliding with cold, dry air. We're also seeing kind of a twisting in the atmosphere, and it could produce either some large hail, possibility of some strong winds, and of course winds can do damage, especially when we've had a lot of rain recently. And then the third possibility is tornadoes. So they are alerting everybody. This is SPC. They're telling everybody, look, conditions are coming together and we want you to be aware. Nobody wants to be surprised with respect to weather. So we're just letting you know these conditions and here's the time we think it's all going to come together. Then they do a handoff. The handoff then is to the local weather service offices. So let's talk Tallahassee because we have an office right here in town. They are right there on the FSU campus, attached to the building that houses both meteorology and math until the new one gets built. But they watch as the storms come in. So, for example, we see a squall line, a line of thunderstorms coming in, and they've already been alerted. So we have a tornado watch in effect, let's say, and then they will have somebody that's dedicated to the radar, and they're watching the sweeps to see if they can't pick out a pattern. They know what something that may be showing some twisting motion may look like on the radar screen. And so they carefully monitor all that. And when it comes together and either somebody tells them that they have seen something or the radar is showing it, that's when they issue a warning. So a watch, you have 4 to 6 hours. You went to a friend's house, you're in a safe home. With a warning, you're now supposed to get into the safest room within your home. So once you've made the decision as to where you want to be, now you just have to take the right measures. Typically, what we tell folks is we want as many walls between where you are going to be and the outside of your home. If something is thrown into the outside of the home, you're more insulated. We don't want you on the top floor. We want you on the lowest floor. We don't normally have basements because the water table is so high here in the state of Florida. But interior closets, a lot of times we tell you the bathroom, as long as they don't have windows. Keep this in mind. It's something I want you to remember, whether it's severe thunderstorms, tornadoes, or even hurricanes. Mattress over your head in the bathtub. It's your method of last resort. The bathtub, because you've got something to insulate you in case, again, there's some flying debris. Drag the mattress, carry it over your head. If something falls, you're going to cushion it so that you aren't going to be hurt. And that's what we really want. We want you to be in the safest place within your home. So the watch means watch out. Warning means it's happening. We know it because somebody has seen it, or the experts that we have in town are showing something on their technology, which is typically the radar, and they're not going to do this erroneously. You have maybe 15, 20 minutes to get to the safest room, and that's what really what we want you to do. So just so that you guys are aware of what the difference between a watch and a warning is, and I just wanted to mention it because it seems like we've had a lot of them issued across our region over the last several weeks. This has been my weather view for the week. I'm Nancy Dignan.
After the Sabbath at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb, and there was a violent earthquake. For an angel of the Lord rolled back the stone and said unto the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen." This Easter, may your heart be filled with the faith and wonder of that first Easter morning, now and throughout the year. A message of hope from Dr. Scott Pliskin at Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive for special care from special people for those you love. Call 402-0557. Wood and Glass on South Monroe, Tallahassee's first family in glass for mirrors, shower enclosures, tabletops, and window glass. Call 222-5781. And Truck and Car Concepts, Tallahassee's market leader for truck and auto accessories, 3270 Mahan Drive. Call 656-8800.
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Kim Ross is the executive director and founder of an organization entitled Rethink Energy Florida. Now, this is a nonprofit organization that is dedicated to engaging, educating, and empowering you and I to take action and achieve energy independence in a healthier, more sustainable environment. Wow, that's a daunting task, and it takes an organization of this kind to push that forward in our minds, because it all happens when you and I resolve that this is a good idea. So Rethink Energy Florida is a leading organization in working toward 100% renewable goals at the city and county levels. So that means you and I have the opportunity to make changes that directly impact our daily lives. Pretty cool. Now, in addition, they hold educational and outreach events. They got a couple of them coming up. We're going to talk about that. Those happen throughout the year for both children and adults. Recently, Rethink was recognized by the Big Bend Leon Association for Science Teaching for Service to Science Education. Wow, that's a cool thing. When Kim was an owner member of Earth Steps, which is an environmental consulting firm, she also worked as the operations consultant and project manager on energy efficiency and demand-side management projects. Back in 2014, Kim was recognized as one of Tallahassee's 25 women to know, and I have to say I'm glad to know you, Kim. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
It's a good thing that we got you in the studio. It's been too long. You were here when you were, what, 10 years old or something? It's been a while.
Yes, 5 or 6 years ago,
seems,
I think. Yeah.
Seems like that. Mm-hmm. And our bad for losing track of you. Because, my goodness, more than ever, right, this is an issue that has become even more critical for us. What are the top three things that bother you, I suppose, or the top five things? What's your agenda these days?
Well, if you put it in terms of what bothers me, I think what bothers me most is just the idea that climate change, sea level rise, that those are coming, that they're happening. They're happening now. They're impacting people now. We have people that are in the heat all day, working all day, and as temperatures rise, then their heat stress goes up. So things are happening
immediate
right now.
Impact, uh-huh.
Immediate impact. And I think the second thing that bothers me is that we don't always have people in the Capitol that actually listen to their constituents on these issues. And so it feels like there's a disconnect, and they're a little bit slow to hop on board.
And I have heard those in those leadership roles on occasion, some acknowledge, yes, climate change is a real thing, and then they will accompany that with the question, is that caused by our behavior? And if so, reasonably, what can we do about it? So on the national scene right now, we have this Green New Deal idea going forward. And some people push back on that as it's just unattainable. But you strike me as somebody who's a bit more, I suppose you'd say, level-headed or moderate or determined to find working solutions in the short run and not just a sort of, yeah, someday we'll be out here achieving all this. How do you approach those folks that say, well, yeah, okay, it may be a real thing, but what do we do?
So I really think it takes all kinds of people, right? Mm. So the young people that are pushing the Green New Deal, I mean, that's important, and their hearts are in it, right? And so what I like is when everyone's hearts get in it.
So you give them points for caring.
I give them points for caring, absolutely.
Try to do something.
And for pushing hard on the agenda so that other agendas can also come forward and be raised into the light.
So in terms of social change, we'll say, sometimes it does take an extreme measure. We have in our own history, in our lifetimes, you and I and the rest of us who are old enough to remember, the civil rights movement.
Right, absolutely.
And how many of those events that occurred during a period of, 20, 30 years were themselves pretty dramatic.
Right, right.
Culminating with the March on Washington,
yes.
Which now becomes this sort of historic moment in our history, recognized for its impact.
Right, right.
And what you're saying is, okay, well, don't get caught up in what may seem to you as an extreme. Look at the big picture, huh?
Absolutely. Look at the big picture, and it's important for, it's absolutely important for those young people to be out and speaking, and it's also important for other folks to be speaking out too, and really looking towards solutions, like you said. That's an important part of the goal is to get solution focused
right.
and figure out how we can all come together to get the best solution.
And I noticed that too. I mean, part of your mission statement here, as I quoted from these notes, engaging,
mm-hmm,
right?
Absolutely.
Educating and empowering. So that suggests to me that there is a call for an open discussion of ideas from one extreme to the other extreme, or from doing nothing to doing something. What's the hardest part of that process for you? Getting people to listen, I suppose.
Getting people to listen and get beyond just the initial reaction, whatever that is, right?
Yeah.
I think most people, once they start looking at the science and start understanding some of the just kind of the basic science that goes behind what climate change is, I think most people want to take action, and then they don't know how. I think the other thing that's really, really difficult for me sometimes is getting folks to come to consensus, which is really something that I value a lot. But that can turn what would be if you're in a voting meeting, a 1 hour meeting into a 4 hour meeting, just to get people to come to consensus
No doubt. Well, do we not all struggle with that? When we have critical issues of this kind, whether it's human rights or earth rights or whatever we're talking about, man, these are big, big deal issues. And, my knowledge of social psychology tells me that we all are given to stereotypic thinking. It's kind of how
true.
We're wired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our brains go, okay, I don't want to have to review all that, so I'm going to compartmentalize.
Right.
And I'll associate then any reference to that topic in this way. And it just keeps me out of having to work so hard. Because, basically human beings are lazy. We like our comfort zones.
Right.
Don't look too strongly in my direction on that, because I'm one of the most comfortable guys I know.
Right.
But it takes somebody like a Kim Ross to come along and nudge me and say, hey, Mr. Comfort, you gotta be willing to step up out of that pre-decided position. What's right now on the agenda? I know you've got a couple of events coming up soon.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, you've got a energy ball June the 8th. Tell us about the energy ball.
Well, the energy ball is one of the funnest events in the summers in Tallahassee. And we get out three bands, come out and
nice.
Perform. We give out something called the Energy Innovator Awards.
How cool.
Which are nominations that we take from all over the state to see who's out there doing neat new things and engaging and educating and or, you know, developing new technologies, those sorts of things. And we recognize and honor those folks.
How cool is that?
At the same time. So.
And that is itself a fundraiser for this other event, which is this kids camp, right?
That's right. So the Energy Ball is a fundraiser for Energy Camp. Energy Camp is a two-week kids camp during the summer, during July, and our kids about age 8 to 12 come and they learn all sorts of things around energy. We start out talking a little bit about the problems, climate change and sea level rise, but we do that in fun ways, and then we immediately turn, as the kids really, really want to do, to solutions and just talk solutions. They put together solar bugs that vibrate in the sun. They make a solar oven. They learn about the connection between energy and
food. So I would be too
food.
Old for this group. I can't come and make solar bugs. Okay.
We do have volunteers. We do take volunteers, but
I need to find a little kid who I could, you know, like be his chaperone or
that's
something
right,
that I could
right.
just sit in. So that happens in July. Have the date set yet, or do we know?
Yeah, it's July 8th through the 12th, and then the 22nd through the 26th.
Very cool. And that happens here in Tallahassee?
It happens here in Tallahassee. We rent out the United Church in Tallahassee.
Oh, neat.
And we have the basement area, and the kids can take a lot of field trips. We take a field trip on the Star Metro bus.
Very cool. All right. Well, we're talking with Kim Ross here, extraordinaire. She is the executive director and founder of Rethink Energy Florida. We're going to continue this conversation, so don't you go away. We'll be right back.
Children are curious and eager learners. Young children learn best when they experience life firsthand in play. FSU Child Care and Early Learning Program knows how to spark their innate desire to find out, figure out, and solve problems through the course of everyday events. Their teachers provide the expert guidance children need to capture and extend their natural eagerness to learn. If you want your child to learn and grow in a safe environment that promotes lifelong learning, call FSU Child Care and Early Learning Program today or visit them online at childcare.fsu.edu. FSU Child Care and Early Learning Program, working together to provide every child with a rich learning environment. Call today, 850-644-7970. 850-644-7970.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're talking with Kim Ross. She is the executive director, founder of Rethink Energy Florida, and households in Leon County, businesses as well, have been able to incorporate solar generation into their daily lives. Carl is one of those folks. He's got solar panels on his house. Kudos to Carl and Sarah. But to get that done, it was a job, you know. In your opinion, do you think we're solar friendly in Leon County, or what do we have to do there? Where are we with that?
Well, so I think in my opinion, it's going to take both individuals doing that as well as the city, and we're real excited that the city and hopefully soon the county will hop on board. But the city hopped on board with, 100% by 2050 with some goals, intermediate goals, and they're looking to set more intermediate goals as well as just to look at what can happen. So the city and their 60-megawatt solar farm that's out by the airport, but also things like what Carl did, that's also important. Yeah. The other thing that we want to keep in mind is, not everybody can afford that, right?
Sure.
And so how do we lift up our more vulnerable communities as we shift into the 21st century?
I will say that I've taken advantage of these low interest loans that the city does offer. If you need to replace your air conditioning heating system, get something more efficient.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's an initiative.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
I mean, so it's not any one thing, is it? It's this composite of all of these ideas. What are those ideas that you wish people were more aware of that are on your list?
Well, I think that folks get really just buried in their day-to-day lives and don't think about the bigger picture of what's going to happen, 10, 20 years down the road. Mm. And here in Tallahassee, some people might say, well, sea level rise isn't going to impact us. That's only sort of true. We won't get the sea in our, you know, in our city, right?
Right.
But over the next 50 years, let's say, Miami is going to have to do something.
How and that about will all include, of those port cities?
Yes, all the Tampa is another big one.
Here and around the world, yeah.
And they're going to need to migrate at some point. And so,
not to mention the commerce that we depend on as consumers.
That's absolutely true.
Oh, you can't get that anymore. Why? Well, because they're underwater.
Right, right.
You know, oh, well, okay. Well, how did that happen?
Right. And then when you look at the impact also to agriculture, right? And so our growing seasons are already shifting. I actually have bananas on my tree right now in April, and usually that's much later in the year. I'm very shocked by that. I just saw that yesterday. So, you know, our growing seasons are shifting. Bugs are, you already know this now, that we don't actually often have a die-off of mosquitoes here in Leon County. Well, mosquitoes have diseases that they carry. Yeah. So those are all things that impact us that I think people don't think about on a regular basis when they're just trying to get through their days. And I understand that. I often am just trying to get through my day. But fortunately for me, my day involves thinking about these things on a regular basis.
So it's the items that are not immediately apparent,
right,
that trouble you and wish that we would be a more willing to dig in. Go a little further in your research and consider maybe the tertiary consequences of something that's happening.
Right, and that it's actually going to be impacting our children here in Tallahassee if our children stay in Tallahassee. Mm.
How did you get started in all of this? Where does this begin for you?
Well, for me, it really began about 11 years ago. I've always been a conservationist. You know, my mother and father raised me right in terms of those values. But I walked into my church at a committee meeting. It was called a Green Sanctuary Committee. And I sat down. It was the first meeting that I attended. And they said, hey, someone needs to help put together the Earth Day service. And they looked around the room. And they said it's an intergenerational service. That means the kids will be with us all service long. Mm. So Kim, you're the only one with little kids. Why don't you do it?
I see. So you got volunteered.
So I got volunteered, and then, but in the process of putting together that Earth Day service, which is actually coming up soon, but in the process of putting that Earth Day service together, then in that case, you know, I started really wakening up to the fact that we need to do something now. We can't wait until the seas have risen. We can't wait because carbon keeps building in our atmosphere, and even after we stop producing carbon or slow it down immensely, it's going to keep the heat will keep building. It's not it's not a process that turns off overnight. Mm-hmm. So we have to do something now in order to make a change 20, 30 years down the road.
Mm-hmm. With that sense of impending concern and the need for immediate action, right? In your mind, what would be initiated now, minimum, in order to try to accomplish all of that?
So at the city level, and to a certain extent at the county level, but at the city level, we are initiating that, which is you know, the city is going to be hiring somebody that will come in and look at how can we switch to renewable energy. Mm. Now, from my perspective, my job in that is to keep educating, engaging people who don't necessarily see it, or educating, engaging the businesses. Mm.
Supplying the information and
talking to people and saying, well, this is how it can actually benefit businesses here in Tallahassee. It doesn't have to be something that everybody's frightened of. Let's talk about how we can do this in a way that lifts everybody up.
Right.
See, and so
I believe in pedicabs, okay?
Those are great. I love
the pedicabs. Just want to say up front, Mike Goldstein did not pay me to say this.
Right, okay? Right. Yeah.
He should have, but he didn't, okay?
He's great.
And Mike's great, and that whole concept, to me, could be expanded
in a lot
of different districts where, you know, pedal power, man, why not? And it's fun.
Sure, and how are we going? And how could we transition our city? You know, there are parts of the city that don't have sidewalks. You know, how can we transition? I enjoy riding the bus. A lot of people think of it as,
I love
pain in the
rear
end. But someone else does the driving. I'm okay with that.
Back to my dad. This is a man who grew when I was growing up in Seattle. He worked for the same company for 45 years downtown Seattle. We lived on the north end of Lake Washington, so a bus ride was 45 minutes one way.
Right.
He took the bus every day. He had a car, but
why do I need to drive a car?
Right.
He took the bus to work, and you know, the bus let him up, you know, 3 blocks from his job. And mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. was the lifestyle that he had enjoyed as a kid.
Right.
And we've departed from that, haven't we?
We have, and our, you know, frankly, our bus system right now isn't set up to really
doesn't accommodate
have
as well.
People yeah. who want to ride. They're, when I get on yeah. the bus, you know, when I do that with the kids in at Energy Camp, and I'll ask the bus riders who are willing to answer, how many people are here because they have to be on the bus versus want to be on the bus, and invariably, it's the adults are mostly there because they have to be. So we need to shift to where people want to be on the bus, and we need a bus system that supports that. Because if I have to wait, if it takes me an hour to get somewhere that should take me 15 minutes, then that's something that, you know, that's going to need to change. So that's part of what the city's looking at when they're looking at how do we get to 100% renewable energy.
Yeah, right. Well, we have plumb run out of time, Kim. I apologize for that. But, man, you have provided us with a lot to think about here, and that is your job.
Yes,
all right,
thank you.
To help us engage and to be better educated and empowered. It's called Rethink Energy Florida, a nonprofit dedicated to these tasks. Our guest this morning, Kim Ross, who is the founder and executive director of Rethink Energy Florida. Kim, thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
A pleasure. Folks, stay with me. We're coming up to the top of the hour here. We'll have more after this break. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. So, you hate your job, and you don't have the skills to get a new one. Well, you're not alone. Over 50% of the people are not happy with their job, and 30% feel like they're at a dead end. Next Professional Development Training wants to change that. They have the courses that you need to jumpstart your career or start a new one. In growing fields like technology and healthcare, their instructors are Microsoft certified and work in the fields they teach, so you know that you're being trained by an experienced instructor. You get to touch, build, listen to, and watch your learning material while learning skills such as Microsoft Office Specialist, CompTIA, Network and Cybersecurity, SharePoint Online, and nursing and medical courses. Start your new career today with Next Professional Career Development. Call or click 850-739-5595 or online at nexttrainingcenter.com. That's nextrainingcenter.com.
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Glad you are with me, my friend. This portion of the show is brought to you by Wooden Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Believe that? Jack Whidden and his company that started all the many years ago, still doing the job they started out to do, and that is to provide you with the best glass products and service, storefront glass, mirrors, tabletops, shower enclosures that are stunning, beautiful. You just, yeah. You want to modernize your house? Get a hold of Wooden Glass and get them to install a shower enclosure. Awesome. And our good friends at Chelsea Salon. Wow. That is the word. When you, whether you're a guy or a gal, and you spend some time over there at Chelsea, they refuse to let you leave there without feeling fantabulous. And they are a full salon, and they have all kinds of services to offer you well beyond the customary haircut and such. Pedicures and manicures and all kinds of neat stuff. Chelsea Salon. Check them out online. You're going to be delighted with the results. So I want to tell you this. We are eager to launch our 2019 Tallahassee Prepared campaign. And as you recall, are working with Leon County Emergency Management, with the City of Tallahassee Utilities and the Fire Department Chief Gaines, Kevin Peters with the Emergency Management, Sharon Tyler with Red Cross. It's been our business to better inform, to keep you and I better prepared for severe weather throughout the year. That is the point. And our thought there is that being prepared isn't just a season, it's an attitude. And of course, hurricane season comes upon us, and we are on
you know, we're on notice. And we have certainly had three major hurricanes now, three in a row. So if we've not gotten your attention by now, well, then I'm not sure what else we need to do. But Prepared is here to keep you alerted even outside of hurricane season, because severe weather includes flash flooding, thunderstorms, as we've experienced here recently, tornado watches in existence. And there was a tornado actually up there in South Georgia that occurred. Right. We've had tornado damage locally here recently. Right. So that is outside of hurricane season, isn't it? Right. How about the severe heat, humidity, the mold and mildew? How about the severe cold temperatures that we've incurred? How about freak hailstorms that happen? So staying prepared for severe weather is a year-round thing. It is in keeping with our topic today, in as much as we've had Kim Ross here with us talking about sustainability issues, energy management. Right. What we do as households and what we do as businesses, it's critical to our well-being. And I think the best way for us to think about preparedness is to think about the people who are next to us. Maybe it's a neighbor. Maybe it's a household member. Maybe it's your mom. Maybe because she's on dialysis or she's wheelchair-bound, you need to think in terms of emergency evacuation. Or what if the power goes out? Do you have a way of supplying yourself with a backup generator? Have you taken that next step? What if you just can't afford that? So then you have to think in terms of next best alternatives. That's what this is all about. TallahasseePrepared.com is the website. And we have some very fine people working very hard to make this all come about. And by the way, for 2019 and 2020, it's a year-long effort. Nancy Dignon is our official chairman of this event, this activity, this campaign, and she will be bringing you all kinds of good information in the weeks and months ahead. So we're delighted to announce that here officially. Nancy Dignon is the chief spokesperson for Tallahassee Prepared, and all that that means to you and I as we go about our business that can be otherwise distracting. You know, and so Nancy's here to remind you, hey, wait a minute now. Do you have enough flashlight batteries, right? Do you have a way of recharging your cell phone? You know, I went out and I bought one of these charging units. It's pretty cool, actually. You keep it plugged in there at your house. This thing has enough wattage to be able to start my car. Wow. But then it's got a little USB port so I can plug my phone in and recharge it that way. So, and I think on the recharge for my phone, that thing has like 20, 25 hours before it needs to be recharged itself. It's pretty cool stuff, man. And those are remarkably affordable. It wasn't a very expensive item. So check that out. Look for those kinds of resources that are available, that are coming about because of the demand for such products. Something else coming up for us on the horizon, that this happens next weekend, and we're excited to be a part of it. Lemoyne Arts, Chain of Parks Art Festival, coming up the 27th and 28th. I want to make sure you know all about this. This is the crown jewel. This festival shines among all the festivals, and they're all great. But in this, what would otherwise be known as festival season for Tallahassee in March, April, May, here we have the Chain of Parks Art Festival as we celebrate over 170 artists from around the country and those locally. We had Randy and Deborah Breenan with us last Saturday to talk about their contributions. They've been involved with Chain of Parks Art Festival for a decade or better. It all happens downtown Tallahassee next Saturday, Sunday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday evening, there's a concert from 5 to 7. Nice little addition to the schedule. That's pretty cool. This is quality fine art from around the country. And you are looking at a juried event. And that is, in fact, why, among artists nationally, the Chain of Parks Art Festival has been ranked either number one, two, or three. They're always in the top five of the art festivals in the country. How cool is that? They feature a center court where you have all kinds of food and beverage. That's awesome. And there will be, of course, all the kids' activities and pop-up entertainment, street chalk art, fun foods, and even a visit with the 16th century Jacques Lemoyne de Morgue. He will be in costume and he'll be there to talk with you about the history of art in Tallahassee, courtesy of Lemoyne Arts and this fabulous Chain of Parks Art Festival. Again, it's next weekend, Saturday, Sunday, the 27th and 28th. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Stay with me.
Children are curious and eager learners. Young children learn best when they experience life firsthand in play. FSU Child Care and Early Learning Program knows how to spark their innate desire to find out, figure out, and solve problems through the course of everyday events. Their teachers provide the expert guidance children need to capture and extend their natural eagerness to learn. If you want your child to learn and grow in a safe environment that promotes lifelong learning, call FSU Child Care and Early Learning Program today or visit them online at childcare.fsu.edu. FSU Child Care and Early Learning Program, working together to provide every child with a rich learning environment. Call today, 850-644-7970. 850-644-7970.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
The Holocaust Education Resource Council. And so it is that we have with us the executive director for the Holocaust Education Resource Council, Barbara Goldstein. How are you?
I'm good this morning. Thank you.
Joining us in this conversation about HERC and an upcoming event that's happening actually, next weekend. No, the last weekend in the month, April 28th. We have Professor of Art Therapy, Dr. Dave Gusak. Gusak is back. He is Professor of Art Therapy, Department of Art Education, Florida State University, the former chair of the department, and a good friend of the show. How are you, sir?
It's good to see you, Brian.
I'm delighted to have our guest, Barbara Goldstein, Dave Gusak, with us because they have this HERC mural at TCC unveiling. Right? Mm-hmm. So this is the event coming up April 28th, 2 p.m. Barbara, tell us about the event.
It's just going to be featuring this wonderful educational opportunity with the mural that was painted. It took 2 weeks. As the process went on, the community was very involved, then came out and helped paint it, actually many students, many community members, and it became very powerful. And everybody that comes and stands in front of it just says, wow. So I'm happy to have Dave here to talk about actually how it was inspired and the design and help us understand the beginning of it, actually.
Indeed.
Well, and it's a little misleading, I think, because to say it was 2 weeks long, and as Barbara knows, this is a process that goes on for months.
Oh.
So the 2 weeks is the culmination of the project.
I see.
That it involves and directed by the students of, this time it was the students of the art therapy program. To give a little history, this is part of the Department of Art Education Opening Night's annual mural project.
Okay.
That started back in 2010 when Steve McQueen was still the director of Opening Nights. This was his brainchild, and basically he had attended a presentation I gave about the Inmate Mural Arts Program, about the value of doing murals as a means of connecting with the community, getting people involved, and creating public art, had asked us to work with him to develop a mural for the community, for the county, for the city of Tallahassee. And we were at the time worked with Roxanne Manning and the mayor of the town, and the students put together this amazing mural. Since then, every year we've worked with Opening Nights to do these murals that involve the community. Well, I had been involved off and on over the past few years, number of years, with Barbara and Herc. And Barbara had approached us about the opportunity to do a mural with and for Herc.
And so, Barbara, this was sort of an invitation then on your side, huh, to do this.
Yeah, but he
Brainiac, you. That was a smart thing you did.
But it became a great opportunity, I think, as a collaboration. And also TCC became very...
So you pulled people together.
Yeah, Barbara was the catalyst on a lot of moving parts.
Duper. That's awesome.
And I want to point something out. I mean, ever since we did the first, by the time we did the third mural, we get a lot of invitations to do these annual murals. Because the students are the ones that put it together, because they're the ones that plan out the process, we limit it to one, maybe two murals a year. But when Barbara approached us, there was no question. We were going to do this mural. And as luck would have it, TCC had just provided Herc a wonderful building on their campus that had a rather unusual wall, to say the least, that was begging for some kind of design, some kind of decoration. And when Barbara and I went to go see the wall, we recognized that around the building there was this fence, this hurricane fence with barbed wire on the top.
Wow.
Which provided a wonderful context for the power of containment and the power of imprisonment, and recognizing that using that type of environment and creating an image that embraces the understanding and the need for education and not forgetting that became the impetus for the design, which, I mean, and Barbara and I, as much as we kind of oversaw the project, Barbara gave us free rein. Barbara trusted this process, which I think if you trust the process, things unfold in directions that you never expect in the most amazing sort of ways.
Right.
And once she passed it off to me being who I am, I passed it off to the students. And Pam Salcedo was the student, the graduate student, who took it and ran, took the ball and ran, and she worked with her partner, Marissa Sawinski.
It was very impressive to me because he's right. I don't trust a lot of people. And I have to give a lot of credit to the students. I want to say that, and I'm going to say that with you, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Because I was sometimes, because of my schedule and his schedule, we had to count on them, and they really went above and beyond. Not only, and it was just very impressive how they took this on emotionally and personally in so many ways. I think they were really impacted, would you say?
Absolutely. Even before we get into the content and the context of the mural, let's talk about the machinations that had to occur. There was a lot of moving parts.
Well, that's what
parts.
I want you to share, the process that I was not involved in. At the end, yes, but not in that, but you can share that.
This is a true community mural in that not only was it involving Herc and Florida State University Department of Art Education and Opening Nights, FSU Opening Nights, but every year since 2010, a man with a truck, Dean Pugh and Gloria Pugh, donate supplies and donate support for this. Eagle Scaffolding provides us an enormous discount for us to use the scaffolding on the wall. This isn't just a simple little painting on a wall. This is an enormous
size.
Yeah, and the
how does it measure? Do you happen to?
I believe it's about 25 feet high, maybe 20 feet high, about 40 feet across.
Yeah. Oh my goodness!
And so
you have to come out and see it. It's
so
huge.
This thing takes your breath away when you see it.
This one certainly does.
Yeah.
The previous murals that we've always done really tried to incorporate community and tried to incorporate the arts. But this one, really, this is probably the first mural that we ever did that had a singular theme, singular composition, with such a simple but very powerful message that embraced the notion of social justice and awareness.
I have in front of me a photocopy, which I'm certain doesn't do it justice, but at least I know that we see in the foreground some children who are looks like planting flowers or watering flowers or something.
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing? They're doing something that it seemed very childlike to me. And in the background, you see this ominous portrayal of Auschwitz and the railroad tracks leading into.
Brian, that was really good.
It looks like a monster with its mouth open, ready to devour you.
That was very good of what you.
So we're going to come back. Stay with me. I've got Barbara Goldstein, Dave Gusak here talking about this remarkable mural at TCC that is a testimony to the resilience and hope of a generation. You stay with me.
In 1945, Jack Whiddon started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Whiddon Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Whiddon because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Whiddon Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Whiddon wanted, and it's been the Whiddon way of doing business for over 70 years. Whiddon Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Whiddon Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or whiddenglass.com.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So we're back. We're talking with Barbara Goldstein. She is the remarkable, and it's said right on her business card, remarkable director, executive director for HERC, the Holocaust Education Resource Council, and Dave Gusak.
And Dave.
We love Dave.
It's Barbara and
Dave.
Dave.
It's a Barbara and Dave show.
Indeed. He is, to his credit, professor of art therapy, Department of Art Education, Florida State University. His business card, they couldn't fit everything on there, so they just said he's
Dave.
The guy.
It just says Dave.
It's the
it's
Dave.
Dave.
Right.
The Dave.
So, remarkably, these two have come together in so many different ways over so many different years in various projects, this one being the mural at TCC, which is unveiling, will be unveiled on Sunday, April 28th, 2 p.m. at Tallahassee Community College. That's at 136 Progress Drive. Remarkable that it would be named Progress Drive. We got into this business of talking about our tenor, the cultural vibe, the conversation, we'll say nationally, and we might add globally. Then this is of concern to all of us. This isn't just the Jews. This isn't just Holocaust.
It's human life.
We have to then take note of what we are capable of, and I think that this particular mural then puts us in stark contrast, doesn't it? So here is this horrific, terrifying, monstrous occurrence in history. And then here is the artistic answer to that. Here is this portrayal. You two folks caught up in all of this in your own place in time and in history, right? And in this community, in your own way, helping us turn our heads and look in that direction, right? This is not a simple one time. This is an ongoing thing that you folks are devoted to and trying to help us better appreciate who we are, where we are, where we're going. Many of the events that you have scheduled, Barbara, are upcoming, and I want to get to those here just as a mention. Particularly, you have this teacher conference coming up in June. Tell us about the teacher conference.
Yes, so this is an annual conference that we provide training for educators, and I'm very excited this year. The topic is called From Swastika to Jim Crow. We'll be showing the film. There's an actual film, and this is how the conference got started. Mm-hmm. And this is, again, another partnership. So with this conference and film, we're partnering with the Film School, with the College of Motion Pictures of Florida State University, who will be bringing in the directors and the producers of the film on the second day, on June 11th. And so the conference will start on June 10th, on Monday morning, with historian, educator presentations to the 50 teachers that attend the conference. And then on Tuesday, the 11th, we'll be showing the film that evening at the CMX theaters.
Oh, wow.
And the directors will be at the film.
Wow. Well,
can I just add one
please,
more thing what
keep
the film
going,
is about?
But I want to say, the first thought I have is, I'm delighted that it's at a major installation, your CMX Theater, rather than it being relegated to, you know, something down there at Railroad Square kind of thing, and, you know, room for 25 people.
Right.
This is a big time. I love that.
This is going to be a big community film with the directors there.
That's awesome.
For discussion after the film.
Yes.
So just a very short summary, because you all have to come to the film, hopefully.
All right.
That in 1933 and 34, when Jewish people needed to leave Germany, otherwise they would be taken to the camps and eventually be taken away, they had to leave Europe. And they came to the United States. Mm. And because of prejudice in this country, one of the only places they could get a job was at Southern Black universities.
Oh.
So the film talks about the close connection of the professors and the students at black, historically black universities with the Jewish refugees.
Wow. And in fact, this particular group ultimately sought refuge in an unlikely place, the traditionally black colleges of the segregated South.
It's a great story and a great film.
Wow.
Yeah. And so many people don't know about it, so we're very excited.
Oh, that is really cool.
Yeah.
David, don't you wish you were a filmmaker instead of just being like
an art therapist?
Maybe you want to switch careers at this point.
I'm very happy with doing what I do, and I'm very happy that there are people out there. I'm relieved that there are people that embrace how the arts allow us to bridge the understanding, as a bridge between all the cultures.
Sure.
You know, I was reflecting while you were talking, and I was thinking back. The first time that Barbara and I actually met was I had been doing a keynote address for the community for the Holocaust Institute for Educators on the art that emerged from the Holocaust,
okay.
And that the art itself serves as an opportunity for resistance.
Yeah, yeah.
And for rehumanizing, and as a need for escape, and this must have been
15 years ago.
I was a lot taller then, and it was
yes, he was yeah.
and to think that's where we've come from, and how now we're using art as a way to reach out and bridge to the community about what this message is, what actually occurred. There's no. The design for the mural was not an accident. It started accidentally, but the way it's designed is not an accident. It's made to draw someone in.
Yeah.
We had gone, Pam and I had gone to Barbara's office, and we were trying to come up with a concept of what this mural could look like that would not be cliche, that would not be, that would be a way to reach the people in a subtle and decorative way, but also have a powerful message. And we saw on the wall a black and white sepia toned photo of Auschwitz with the train track going into the entrance, and
that struck us very strong. Right, you're
no
right.
Doubt.
And that train track pulls us in,
right.
And the perspective pulls you into the image. And so Pam and had discussed, and we started discussing, was how this mural can be used in a very simple single perspective composition to pull the viewer in and to take you back into time,
right.
And that the railroad at the bottom of the this mural pulls you up to Auschwitz, to the camp, and yet interrupting this journey into Auschwitz, which is a very colorful foreground image of these children who are transforming this railroad track, which was a path to death,
right,
into a path for resilience and hope by cultivating the garden, and what we anticipate was cultivating the garden of understanding.
Yeah. Correct.
It reminds me of so many artists who themselves have, maybe this is unfair to say that only a few artists are this way, but some come to mind for me that come at life with a message, right? And so when I've gotten to know you, Dave, over the years, your abilities and your work as an art educator has underlying this larger purpose. There's a broader perspective for you.
Well, and I'm going to give credit. I'm not an art educator, but I do teach for the Department of Art Education, and all the faculty in our department understands the value of the message that art can do. Now, as an art therapist, my job would be to hopefully instill in the people I work with, mostly those who are imprisoned, to deliver a message. And I do think that all artists have a message about their work. So all artists are delivering a message. And I don't mean this flippantly. I think even those artists whose message might be, we don't have a message. And that's enough of a message to convey to the audience. This piece serves as a lot of functions.
Do not have a message. That is my message.
Right.
You know, that's the theme of this show, actually. So I'm going to stop right now. We're going to take a break.
Postmodern of you.
Take a breath.
You're so on target with this show, Dave.
I mean, it's remarkable. Yeah, we Look really don't have a purpose.
Did you pay,
and that's our purpose.
Did you pay him?
Never. So he owes me.
You know why? Because he's priceless.
Is that what that is? Right. Folks, we're going to take a break because we need a moment of quiet here. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We'll be back right after
you
this.
Both are so funny.
On the first day of the week at early dawn, they came to the tomb and found the stone rolled away from the entrance. But when they entered, they did not find the body of Jesus. And it happened that two men suddenly stood near them in dazzling apparel and said to them, "Why do you seek the living one among the dead? He is not here. He has risen." This Easter, may your heart be filled with the wonder of that first Easter morning. A message of joy from Dr. Eve James at Southern Smiles Family Dentistry in Quincy for comprehensive family dentistry in a relaxed, comfortable setting. Call 875-3908 Seller's Tile on Capitol Circle Northeast for the best design ideas and quality tile, carpet, hardwood flooring, mosaics, ceramic, and vinyl solutions for your home or office. Call 656-8453. And Tallahassee Family Magazine, bringing you real families, real stories, available at local newsstands and bookstores, online at TallahasseeFamilyMagazine.com.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Dave Gusek, Barbara Goldstein. We have another event to mention here coming up in October. So we're out of ways, but yeah, put it on your calendar. Come on. Thursday, October 10th is the annual Remembrance Dinner, and this year it features James Grimes, Violins of Hope. Musicologist James Grimes will discuss his book, Violins of Hope, not Violence, Instruments of Hope and Liberation in Mankind's Darkest Hour. So, honorary chairs, Judy and Steve Wynn. And, of course, all of this coming to you by way of this remarkable organization, Holocaust Education Resource Council. Anything else you want to say about that, Barbara?
One more thing, and we will be honoring Senator Bill Munford.
Wonderful.
Yes.
For his work.
For his wonderful work for education.
So back to this mural. Stunning. I mean, it's captivating. So it's accomplished that. But then there are some, we'll say, maybe more subtle aspects of the mural that you want to speak to, especially the flowers the children are.
I think the specific flowers were planted also represent, I think they were irises that also represent hope and resilience. Even the children's faces, you have one dark child and one white child.
Yeah.
And so that was noticed by somebody that came to stand in front of it and look at it.
Yeah.
The light on the top is actually part of the building that was incorporated into the mural. So if just standing there was just so powerful. I had a retired fourth grade teacher came out to visit the 2 days ago, and she stood in there, and all she said three times, she said one word, wow.
Yeah.
You know, it's As any community mural evolves, people work on it from all sorts of different right. corners of the community, and they're going to change parts of it. Mm. And I remember there was a group of people that came from one of the schools, and the girls that were painting very much wanted to change the flowers, and they started changing the flowers, the flowers. They started painting it, and the students who oversee it, the art therapy graduate students oversee it, they're struggling between protecting the composition, the image, but also, as the process evolves, recognizing the value of ownership, recognizing the value of expression, we're able to hold back and allow the students to change the look of the flowers, which then prompted us, but knowing that there was a message that still had to be conveyed through the image of the flowers, that the irises still had to be there, to give that subtle message. Huh. And so the students then went back in and redid some of the flowers, but allowing some of the other flowers that the community did to hold on to their identity. Right. So while, and that, I think this is important for our graduate students as well as for the community to recognize that things will change and evolve, and that you belong to a larger piece, that although once you release the composition and the plan and the map, it is then taken on by the community. This is one of those rare pieces that the final image reflected clearly from beginning to end what the original intention and map looked like.
Yeah.
Again, with some variations. But I think everyone was able to stay focused on the single message,
which
I don't think has ever really happened before.
You know, I didn't know that because, of course, I'm so involved this time, but never before. And you being your overall involvement have seen how the different ones have changed. Mm-hmm. This really, I think, became very meaningful and very just stood alone in some way, what it was.
Yeah, I mean, they all have various meanings for so many of us.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, I think, was so much more simple, mm-hmm. straightforward, singular, telling a very singular story. Where it's placed. Now, understand there's a lot of complications here that the students overcame. The corrugated side, the metal side.
I realize that.
Mm-hmm. So at one point, we were wondering.
So that is a piece of corrugated metal that they're painting on.
And they painted right on that. Wow. They incorporated the texture and the industrial look of the metal into the composition of the piece.
Right.
Instead of recognizing that this is a limitation that's going to take away from it, they made it work. And so. So when you drive down Progress Avenue and you see this, it jumps out
at
you.
It does. And they were so smart to incorporate this light that's on the building.
Yeah, there was a light. In the past, we've had members of the community change where the murals were. They moved things. They moved air conditioning units. They moved doors.
We talked about that, actually, in the very beginning.
We considered it.
But you said no.
No, let's. There's a light in the middle. Of the top middle of the wall, and Pam designed the mural in such a way that light, although it's part of Auschwitz, becomes a beacon, and it lights
they
up.
Just painted
the
around.
They painted around the it and they incorporated it, as you see from the mural. The mural kind of progresses from a very colorful forefront
to a very dark
gray and monotone image.
So you're moving through time. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that aspect of resistance, almost a cultural entrenchment. And we talk about refugees from Nazi Germany finding themselves in southern United States, 1940s, finding... of all places, a kind of refuge among traditionally black colleges in the South, and faced with segregation and segregationist thinking. For you, where is that rooted? You talk about this collaborative process, the release of an idea so that it can be owned by all. And I'm wondering if that's where we get stuck. We get stuck individually. We get stuck socially and culturally that this is mine. This belongs to me. And so I control it. You don't participate in it.
Oh, this is everyone's. Take a look at the image again. And I think what the message we were giving is we're trusting the children to carry the message, right, to carry it forward. But look what they're doing. They're watering, they're protecting, mm-hmm, these lone flowers growing up from the track. They're carefully cultivating this very fragile flower. I think the remarkable thing that Barbara does for the community and for Herc is that, mm-hmm, is a message that I think a lot of us can take, which is, as much as she is tenacious and, mm-hmm, she drives things forward to make things happen, mm-hmm, everything she does is for everyone else. And once she starts it, she releases it for other people to take it forward. And I think we would all do well as a community to recognize that what we need to do is cultivate the community, that, mm-hmm, we can start the ball rolling, but also trust the process, mm-hmm, and give and continue to give. It's not purely altruistic. I think it's safe to say that we all get fed by what we do.
He's right in a lot of ways, but I also felt that this was something I wanted, mm-hmm, to see happen, so I kind of just helped in, mm-hmm, every way, but it came together, mm-hmm, because of the collaboration.
Yeah, you had to release in your own way. You said this early on.
What?
Well, we're looking forward to learning more as
Thank
we
you.
Go forward in the weeks and months ahead. Our good friends, Barbara Goldstein, Executive Director for Holocaust Education Resource Council, and the ever effervescent Professor of Art Therapy, Department of Art Education, Florida State University, Dave Gussack.
You just like saying effervescent.
My buddy. I like saying Dave Gussack better, right. But yeah, okay. Folks, that's what I've got for you today. We are the production of Alcom Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat. That is the sound of Tallahassee at moosemagnificat.com, playing all local musicians their original songs, the sound of Tallahassee. Our executive producer is Carl Cerny. He's amazing. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee. Come talk to me.
A first-class, fun-filled outdoor cultural experience is waiting for you at this year's Chain of Parks Art Festival, Saturday and Sunday, April 27 and 28. Amazing, original, and one-of-a-kind works of fine art from over 170 artists from across the country on display. Nationally ranked among the top 5 art festivals in America by Sunshine Artist Magazine, this 2-day celebration is free and open to the public and includes fun kids' activities, fantastic live entertainment, lots of great food, and plenty of libations from the WXYZ bar by Aloft. The Chain of Parks Art Festival, charming, delightfully Southern, and the crown jewel of Tallahassee's festival season. We'll be looking for you Saturday and Sunday, April 27 and 28, at LeMoyne Arts, Chain of Parks Art Festival in downtown Tallahassee. Find out more at chainofparks.com.